These are eggs. Quick whisk, no risk, protein punch, power lunch, bake for dinner, easy winner, fed the lot, hit the spot, eggs. And why pick up more eggs when you're shopping? Because there are more ways to enjoy them. Like bacon and mushroom fried rice with poached eggs, delicious sautéed potatoes with spinach and eggs, or everyone's favourite, a simple cheese omelette for lunch. So versatile, so nourishing. And always choose eggs with a Board Bia quality mark for the highest standards verified at every stage. Eggs, crack on.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarrachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach anseo gur féidir é a chur in uaigh ceart lena bhaintear féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarrann go raibh an orthchar san i lis dúthail agus gimine fnacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhin ann dardaraach sin. Vin Marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Left Wing. Well, Andy Farrell has named his team to play England at Twickenham on Saturday. There's one change to the team that started the win over Wales a few weeks ago. Hugo Keenan is back fit. There's no Gary Ringrose in the squad. It's a 6-2 split on the bench. James Ryan is injured. I'm Sinead Cassan and I'm joined here by Rory O'Connor and Keane Tracy. We're at the Radisson, lads. The team are flying off later today.
Yeah, just flying up there.
The camera's facing the wrong way, but we would have had exclusive content of the Irish rugby team taken off for London.
Andy Farrell was out the door straight across the airport. The players were parking up outside and heading across the road with their bags earlier. In previous years, they've all gathered here for food and stuff. Seems a bit more, maybe it's an earlier departure or whatever. It is their day off, I suppose. But yeah, off to Twickenham for the penultimate leg of the Grand Slam bid.
There was kind of a doubt, wasn't there, in the in the last 24 hours whether Keenan would make it.
Yeah, I mean, I had to tip off about that he was going to make it, and then it was quite... You just doubt yourself and you doubt the information you're getting from the camp as well. When John Fogarty says everyone trained and everyone's fit, you're kind of going, okay, well, that's great, but you know, remains to be seen. Ollie Yeager's was out injured as well. Andy Farrell said his knee hasn't quite cleared up. And Ryan emerged as an injury yesterday. He's done his bicep and that kept Ross Byrne out for 3 months. So that's a big blow for Leinster as well as Ireland. But Keenan, especially going up against this England team, albeit one that's going to have a very unfamiliar looking back three, if we believe reports coming out of England right now, he's such a pivotal figure. He gives you so much more, and this is nothing against Kieran Frawley, but he gives you so much more confidence in an Irish team going to Twickenham to have Hugo Keenan in that number 15 shirt. I watched him train last Thursday at the Aviva, and he looked so free in his movement. He was kicking balls, and then for him to train on Tuesday, train on Wednesday, like with the 6-2 split, they have to be confident that he's going to make it through 80 minutes, because otherwise you're in trouble. I mean, I know Frawley can come on and do a job there, but really you have to be confident because you've got Gary Ringrose there as well. So they obviously are, and it's a huge fill-up for this team. It's as close to the first team as they can get it right now. And the interesting point, I think, is that Farrell has stuck with 6-2, even though Ringrose is available. That's a big statement of faith in that 6-2. He could have put Ryan Baird in at 19 with James Ryan out and not brought back Henderson. But this is now clearly the identity of his team, having that bench. So they're the big talking points, but it's a very strong team. You know, we could talk about the decisions and stuff like that, but when you step back from it and look at the 23 names on paper, that's a hell of a team going to Twickenham.
Yeah, like Keenan's fitness was what it all hinged on, really, because obviously if Keenan wasn't fit, then you would have had Kieran Frawley staying in the 15 jersey, which probably would have meant Guy Ringrose came into the 23 jersey. Now, I think that would have been really harsh on Stuart McCloskey, who's been so consistent every time he's gotten an opportunity for Ireland. But that's just the strength and depth that Andy Farrell has in his squad at the moment. It's incredible to think that a fit Guy Ringrose doesn't get into the Ireland 23 going to...
It's unreal.
It's unheard of, really. And I suppose it's been rare enough that Bundy Aki, Robbie Henshaw and Guy Ringrose have all been fit at the same time. But it sends out a good message to the squad. Look, I don't think personally there was ever much chance. It's not in Andy Farrell's style to have dropped Robbie Henshaw for Guy Ringrose. I think the big thing was he going to come onto the bench?
Yeah.
But the fact he doesn't is obviously, you know, implicated by the fact that Ireland are going for a 6-2. I think if it had been a 5-3, you certainly would have seen Ringrose, because he does offer for a 6-2 lead as well. So Rudd's right. I think James Ryan being out, which is the big talking point of this morning, is obviously no one had heard it. It only happened in training yesterday.
At the RDS?
I saw a few of the players walking around Ball's Bridge yesterday at lunchtime, so maybe they were doing a bit of training there, I'm not too sure. But Andy Farrell described it as a freak accident, you know, so that's a big blow. And he would have had, like Rudder's touched on, a justified reason to go, okay, let's go to a 5-3. But like, Ian Henderson has had a tricky enough season. Obviously, he dislocated his toe for Ulster. You know, Ulster obviously going through a tricky spell on and off the pitch, you'd have to say. But what an opportunity is for him to come back in. Like, it's worth remembering that he had taken James Ryan's place at the World Cup. And look, he is the... not to use a cliche, but Ian Henderson is a big game player. He very rarely lets Ireland down. And he's going to have a big responsibility as part of this 6-2 split on the bench. I know James Ryan got yellow carded in the last game against Wales, but he was excellent for the time he was on the pitch. He made 11 tackles in something like 20 minutes. So I would have no fears that Ian Henderson will come in and make a similar impact. But it's a massive boost, it goes without saying, to have Hugo Keenan back.
Yeah, and you asked Andy Farrell about the injury to James Ryan, about the exclusion of Gary Ringrose from the squad. But first, here's Andy Farrell on Hugo Keenan returning to the team.
I think it'd be a boost for any side in world rugby. He's a world-class fullback, isn't he? And it's testament to him, and it's no shock to us that he's been able to get himself back to this position to be involved this weekend, as he's been unbelievably diligent over the last few weeks to make that happen.
What does it say about the strength and depth that you have in the squad at the moment that a guy like Guy Ringrose, I'm presuming he's fit, is able to get into the 23?
He's fit and he's well. He's trained all week. He's done all the contact work necessary to be available. It's just circumstances. Gary knows exactly. I did the chat with him yesterday, and he was smiling actually, and in the fact that it's just circumstances. He knows what I think about him as a rugby player. His comments to me was that he's been on the good side of circumstances so many times as a player as well. So he understands.
Just a final one for me. Is James Ryan injured or what's...
He's injured, yeah. He got injured yesterday in training. Just a freak accident, really, of just a reaction. Reaching out for a tackle that was non-contact. And he's injured his bicep. So he most likely, well, he won't, in fact, be available for the remainder of the Six Nations.
Finlay Beelam over Ollie Yeager was both fit.
Both were fit. No, that's wrong. Ollie's got a bit of a niggle with his knee, so played his first test, obviously, and that was a big week for him. Finlay's unbelievably experienced and been doing really well for us in the past, and he's really keen to get out there and show what he's got at Twickenham.
It was interesting what he had to say there about Gary Ringrose being left out and his approach to that.
Yeah, it reminded me of what he said and Peter O'Mahony said a couple of years ago, that it was the most enjoyable environment, despite the fact that Peter O'Mahony at the time had lost his place in the team. Look, I think it speaks volumes for the character of Gary Ringrose. I don't think there are too many stroppy players in this squad who would throw the toys out of the pram. I think we have to remember as well that Ringrose, it's a different situation to Hugo Keenan, in that I think the Leinster Leicester game was on January 20th, which is quite a long time ago. So Hugo Keenan has missed 4 weeks, but Gary Ringrose has obviously missed much longer. So look, if he had to come back in, I've no doubt he would have hit the ground running, but it's a bigger ask to do that. He's had a longer spell out. So look, he's travelling with the squad this weekend. It was interesting later on in the press conference. Andy Farrell made the point that the fact that this is the end of the Six Nations is back-to-back games. He's almost expecting there to be a couple of casualties this weekend, and maybe he will opt to freshen up the team going into that Scotland game next weekend, depending on what happens in Twickenham this weekend. But it just, like I said earlier, what a luxury to have Kerry Ringrose not in a match day 23. It just shows how strong this Ireland squad is.
Yeah, Stuart McCluskey as well. I think, you know, one of the most unlucky players of his generation. He played very well off the bench the last time. It was his tackle that led to the turnover that led to the try in the end for Tadhg Byrne, and he's been excellent in the games that he's been involved in so far, and he misses out. So that's, you know, just again a reflection. Like if Ireland were going into Twickenham this week with Stuart McCluskey in 12 and Ringrose at 13, you would have utter faith in them doing the job. I mean, that's incredible depth, and England, it's a problem position. But I think Farrell's never explicitly told us that any player has been disappointed, but it does seem like the attitude of the players is incredibly positive, they're well able to take bad news, take it on the chin. I saw Gary walking over to the airport. He's traveling, I think they're all traveling this weekend. But you contrast that with what Johnny May was talking about the England squad this week, and how players come in on a Monday and they're fretting, they're stressed because they think they might get dropped, and every time England have a bad result, there's a big campaign in the media to kind of make changes, as there would be in Ireland. You know, it's quite normal for people to debate the selection. The coaches become influenced in that, and they kind of lurch from selection to selection. English players get a lot of money for playing for England. There's individual match fees. There's a very important financial considerations leaning on it as well. But I don't get the sense that Irish players ever come into this environment stressed. They're stressed about performance. Like, performance is the big thing. But I don't get the sense that selection hovers over them in the same way. And Ringrose taking it the way he did, he can see what Robbie Henshaw is doing. And he hasn't played for so long. I think it reflects the stability. I was writing about this morning, the cohesion and stability in the Irish system. And I never really thought about it in this way, in terms of the players just not being stressed over selection in the same way as an English player would, because English players
imagine the energy that takes out of you as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
We spoke to Cian Healy earlier this week, and there's a piece up on independent.ie in the Irish Independent, and he spoke about how exactly the point that you're making there, Rod, that there is pressures in this environment, but it's a different kind of pressure, that you are allowed to have an off day in terms of not, you know, always having a pep in your step. People understand that everyone's not always going to be in good form. There might be things going on away from the pitch, and I think there's more leeway for players to express that. And it sounds a bit, you know, fuddy-duddy, but I think there's a genuine warmth amongst the players, and that's reflected in Ringrose's attitude. And it's also worth, I think, highlighting the fact that Andy Farrell hasn't necessarily dropped Kieran Frawley from the 23, because even though once he's going with a 6-2 split on the bench, there's a risk in going with 6-2 for obvious reasons. But if he had went with Conor Murray and Gary Ringrose, that's even more of a risk, because if Jack Crowley goes down injured after 5 minutes, you are certainly putting square pegs in round holes. Now, I think they would have embraced that, but again, we go back to messages and Farrell's kind of emotional intelligence. But I think, again, it's a good thing that Kieran Frawley has kept his place in the squad, because he was very good against Wales at fullback.
If I were Gary Ringrose now, I'd be going to Leo Cullen and going, I want a game at 10 in the URC before the end of the season, or in pre-season next year. I want to get that experience, because that is now the battle that they're in. And he knows he's up, like Bunyaki is, you know, early to mid-30s. Robbie Henshaw has his injury profile in recent years has been difficult. Gary knows he's going to get another shot, but whereas I don't think Bundiaki or Robbie Henshaw have the skill set to go into 10.
Tadhg Byrne
Ringrose does. Furlong is you're not the first person to make that suggestion on a podcast this week.
Oh really?
I did hear that somewhere else, but like, you know, that means there's a groundswell for Furlong to go in at 10. But I think Ringrose has the skill set. Like, he kicked goals for Blackrock as a young
guy. I think Conor Murray played a bit of 10 when he was younger as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Murray is looking at for his new contract, and he's looking to be relevant for Munster in the next couple of years. Like, why doesn't he go? Like, and Munster are, you know, a little bit callow at 10 right now. Like, I think every player coming through the system, every back is looking at this going, I need to retrain myself to some degree and make sure I can cover as many positions as possible. So it's like the reverse Kieran Frawley.
Yeah, that's exactly.
The irony of this conversation. I've made this point definitely a couple of times on this podcast. Ahead of the second Maori game in New Zealand, Kieran Frawley said he didn't want to be a jack of all trades. At that point, I was kind of going, wow, he is probably at a stage now where he's going to go to Leo Cullen at the start of next season. I want to be a 10. Now, I don't know what kind of conversations they had behind the scenes, but the reason Kieran Frawley hasn't left Leinster or thrown his toys at her pram is for moments like this, because it's worked in his favour at Leinster as well in terms of getting into squads for big games. And now it's happening as well. He's going to be involved in a match day 23 for the first time in back-to-back games. So for those who would say, oh, you should get out of there, he'll say, well, like, I'm still being picked in the biggest games, you know. So, and I'm being picked ahead of a guy like Gary Ringrose. So it's a funny one. Like, I can kind of see both sides of the argument when it comes to Kieran Frawley, but the last 2 weeks, or these 2 weeks in terms of game weeks, are proof that his versatility can actually work in his favour as well.
Yeah, so Finlay Beelam is back on the bench as well, so Ollie Eager still has that knee niggle as well, but I'm delighted to see Finlay Beelam back. He scored that try 2 years ago to get the fourth try bonus point, and I thought he did so well so far in this championship as well.
Even if Ollie Eager had been fit, and like, I thought Ollie Eager did well when he came off the bench, I would be shocked if Finlay Beelam wasn't on the bench. Finlay Beelam is Ireland's backup tight head at the moment. Ollie Eager might be in time, but the body of work that Finlay Beelam has put together behind Tyke Furlong, who Andy Farrell was speaking about in the press conference as well, he's been playing great stuff.
He make his 75th Ireland cap.
Yeah, and like, obviously, you know, he's had tough times off the pitch and all that, but he was very good in that Wales game. He's getting on much more ball than he has been before, and it just goes to show that, you know, the stuff that's come out, obviously, sadly, about Tyke's dad, like, you just don't know what's going on behind the scenes with these players. So, like, we've all been, you know, trying to analyse performances, and Tyke Furlong hasn't been at his best, you know, in 2023, but there's extenuating circumstances for that. But Finlay Beelam fully deserves his place. I don't necessarily think he got dropped for the Wales game. I think it was more
Ollie Eager,
which, you know, they want to fast track Ollie Eager. He's been going well in limited enough appearances that he's played
for Munster.
They
seem to really like him.
Yeah, and you can see why. He's an enormous man, and it makes sense to try and get him up to speed. But when you're going to Twickenham with your best players on board, Finlay Beelam's body work, I think, speaks for itself. He deserves his place.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'd say it was part of Ollie Eager's deal to get him to come over. It was like, look, you're getting capped at some stage. Yeah. But I think by the time we get to South Africa, it's a live debate. And I think Eager's good enough to push certainly Beelam, and even just light a fire under Furlong as well if he gets a good run of games. I know scrummaging wise he's not at the level that Furlong is just yet, but, you know, by the time you get to, say, the Lions selection in a year or two, you know, he'll have had a year and a half of European rugby under his belt, and he's got the size, he's got the skill set. I think it was such a clever piece of business. I mean, we picked teams, you know, for the 2027 World Cup, and it was before Beelam had come onto the radar, you know, and it did look like a problem position. And suddenly, you know, even Tom O'Toole is a good operator. I saw him heading over to the airport earlier. Like, he's now fourth choice, and he needs to respond to that. So you've got a really good tight head in all four provinces. It's almost a perfect example of the system working.
Yeah.
It helped as well that, sorry, Sinead, it helped as well that Beelam has stopped switching over both sides of the scrum, that he's actually concentrated on tight heads. That's a very difficult thing to do.
It
like
is,
Andrew Porter.
Not a bad thing. Like, I thought Porter was going to have
absolutely.
Time,
and I think he, in case of an emergency, I think he would switch back. But as we're watching the Ireland under 20s coming into the same hotel to fly over to there in Bath, aren't they, tomorrow night?
Yeah.
But it's definitely a good thing to have. But I think it's massively helped Beelam's claims to be Ireland's backup tight head when he hasn't been switching back between the two.
Do you remember the go-to word last year was adversity? I mean, you look at the health of the squad now. I mean, obviously, we just got that news today about James Ryan, his bicep injury, Ollie Eager and the knee, but they are in a pretty healthy position with Hugo Keenan back. Gary Ringrose was fit for selection as well.
Yeah, they're in form, and they've got a really good injury profile. I mean, obviously, Mac Hansen would add something to what this team could do, and also he covers 10, and so does Jimmy O'Brien. So either of those players could be that 23.
10.
I think yeah. You know, Jimmy O'Brien comes back. He has played a bit of 10, you know, in the second half of games for Leinster. But in terms of you know, when you compare it with England, they're kind of muddled. They're kind of lurching from one team to another. It's very hard to identify their identity. Ireland, you know what way they're going to play. You know who's going to, like, we kind of, you know, Keane, you flagged it on Monday, which team he was going to pick if Keenan was fixed. Sorry, he was fit. And really, there was no debate about this team. You know, he could make a case for Ringrose coming back in, but really, you know, you're standing on sand a little bit with it because Henshaw's been so good. So, you know, the stability, the cohesion that they're able to call upon, the quality of players across the board, the knowledge of the game plan, the fact that the three or four new players have come into the team in this season have just hit the ground running and know the system because they've had 18 months, 2 years training with the players. It's such a position of strength to be going to a game that is traditionally one of Ireland's most difficult fixtures, and no one outside of the team is stressed about it. They're 11-point favourites. It's a remarkable position for anyone who grew up in the 80s and 90s to be going to Twickenham with this level of belief and confidence in the team. It just shows how the whole thing has flipped in recent years, and it's really hard to get your head around, and like, you can build a case for England troubling them, but every time you do, you can undermine it just as quickly.
Yeah, we'll get onto that in a moment, and the possible England team for this weekend. But first, here's Andy Farrell on the challenge he's expecting from England this weekend.
I don't get involved with the criticism at all. I don't look at that. I look at the individuals, the way that they're playing, the coaching staff that they've got, the plan that they've got. I know that they're a fantastic side that's going to be preparing to give it everything they've got at the weekend, so that makes them unbelievably dangerous. We just prepare for them to be at their best, and if that's the case, it's going to be one hell of a battle.
So build that case for England. What could be the pinch points? We don't want to be caught with our pants down again, which I feel we were back in 2019 when they came over that time.
Well, I think the fixture has provided examples when one team was flying and the other one absolutely ransacked them on the day.
There is history here, yeah.
One element. So, like, if Ireland are, and I don't get any sense that they're overconfident, and one thing Farrell has done a very good job of is grounding them, but maybe the World Cup quarterfinal, maybe they came into that game not expecting what New Zealand were going to throw at them, and New Zealand gave their best performance of that generation of players in so many ways, and knocked them off their stride and gave a template. But I think the template they're really going to borrow from is South Africa, who haven't managed to beat Ireland, but if they'd had a goal kicker on the pitch in either of those games, probably would have beaten Ireland. They dragged Ireland into their lowest score, I'm pretty sure, in both of those games. Like, certainly there were, you know, very low scoring games, and Felix Jones' presence in English coaching ticket suggests that they're going to kind of try and mirror what South Africa did in those games. And what South Africa did in those games was go after Ireland in the air, go after Ireland at the breakdown, slow down their ball, make it an absolute fight at every occurrence, and then limit the possession that Ireland have, and also bring the line speed to cut off the options. The issue for Jones and Borthwick is I don't think England have the players to execute that game plan as effectively. I don't think they have the scrum to do what they did 2 years ago even. I think Ireland's scrum has improved to a point where they're not going to be troubled. I think the line-out is an avenue where they can get at Ireland, and I think, you know, the absence of Ryan off the bench probably hinders them a little bit, you know, in terms of that 80-minute performance, which Andy Farrell wants this weekend. I think that, you know, with Earl and Underhill, if they're selected, which as we expect them to be, there is an avenue to slow down Ireland's ball. It sounds like Itoje is going to be at six with George Martin coming into the second row. That's three very big men in the lineout for Dan Sheehan to try and avoid. I'm surprised. I know Keane is going to bring us a bit of team news, but like, if Freddie Stewart isn't involved, I just think that's a really poor call. I think he's the kind of player who could trouble Ireland in the air.
Absolutely, so, have
like,
him
Keane,
in there.
Do you want to go through what you've heard and the back three?
Yeah, because we're recording this, we don't have the England team yet, but like, there's obviously a lot of,
well, to be fair,
going
I'm
around.
Going off Chris Foy, English journalist, esteemed English journalist. They're reporting that George Furbank, Faye Yeboso, and Tommy Freeman are going to be in the back three. So we've already spoken about how important, you know, Hugo Keenan is coming in and to the Ireland's
and
back
4
three.
To 10, is it?
And 4 to 10, yeah,
Mitchell,
sorry. Mitchell at 9. So that back three, to be fair to Steve Borthwick, like, if you had told me that back three is going to be playing against Ireland and Twickenham, I wouldn't have believed it, because like, when I look at Freddie Stewart, and I have to admit, I do think he's a little bit overhyped in English circles, but he's solid at what he does. He's a good player under the high ball.
He'd be a man for this game.
Yeah, he does not offer you the same kind of counter-attacking threat, but this back three, I would almost say, is almost anti-Steve Borthwick. So you can see that they are trying to move in a new direction, but you still have a few kind of old-timers there, like George Ford is going to be playing 10. I think the set piece, you've touched on it, Rudd, is really where England are going to get after Ireland. And I think they can possibly get after Ireland. Like, Ireland's scrum wobbled in Marseille with Paul Willemse off the pitch. Their line-out wobbled against Wales, and you would say England's line-out is probably better than Wales.
Definitely,
certainly,
yeah,
better than Wales. Italy didn't contest against Ireland for some reason at the set piece. So I think there are avenues for this English team to get after them. And we saw what happened a couple of years ago in Twickenham when the Irish scrum was derailed and Matthew Rainall came out afterwards and said he got a couple of decisions wrong. Now, obviously, Ireland still ended up winning that game. You know, again, there was a red cards in the last three games for Ireland. Yeah, yeah. For England, they've been factors as well, early red cards as well.
But it, funnily enough, 2 years ago, it seemed to galvanise.
Yeah, it did. In a weird way, it did. But there's enough there to suggest that England can hurt Ireland, but it's whether it's enough to do it across the course of the 80 minutes, because even if it's a tight game, which it could well be on 55 minutes, the power that Ireland are going to roll off the bench, and that could be the telling difference in the end.
I mean, Borbic seems to pick his team partly on opposition and partly on the weather forecast, and it's going to be a nice day, so he's picked a very strong running back three.
Nice day on Saturday. I looked it up, it's going to be a bit of rain, I think it's changed.
Well, certainly
conflicting phone apps here.
Well, I mean, like, that's the thing about, like, I remember one of the early games under Joe Smith, it was supposed to rain in Murrayfield, and it built the entire game plan around this, and then it didn't rain, and then I'm kicking the ball in dry conditions, and it was mad. Like, you know, if you overthink
it. Is that the bus?
No, it was a different one. It was before that 15, I think. But if you do that, if you pick this back three based on that, and you kind of, you know, the dysfunction of the English system is you have two Northampton Saints and an extra chief. The Northampton Saints players are really adjusting to line speed, whereas Feo Boso has been playing in a system that's been ultra line speed, as we saw against Munster. Now, Jack Crowley picked it apart on that day. Yeah. You know, I know it ended in tears, but whereas Northampton were actually more effective against them, if you remember, you know, he played against both of them. But it's such a muddled, like, it's going to take Felix Jones so long to get his system embedded into these players, because they all go back to their clubs and they play a different way. You know, he's chopping and change. I think if you're trying to bed in a new attack and a new defence, you really have to pick the same players over and over again to give them a chance to impress and to learn it. And Feo Boso, like, incredible athlete, one of the most exciting players in world rugby, you know, based on what we've seen from him. But Ireland, like, Jack Crowley will be looking at him going, right, what's his defensive positioning like? You know, Ireland will, their kicking game will try and expose him. And he's certainly not as big a threat in the air, from what I've seen of him, than some of the players he's replacing. Because Elliot Daly, you know, if England's path to victory is go 3-6-9, well, having a guy who can kick the ball over from 55-60 metres is a massive weapon. But now he's not in the 23, or sorry, he might be in the 23, but he's not in the team. So I don't know. I think you can build a case, and then he's picked a team that's a completely different one. So we're looking at a different strategy from them, which we haven't seen before. And on the evidence of what we've seen, it's just very hard to make a convincing case that England can do it.
The point on Jack Crowley is great, and I feel like that's probably been overlooked a little bit this week, because that extra game, I was over it. And like, but every time you're at a live game, you guys know yourself, you get a better appreciation for
space and
vision, and the way Jack Crowley picked apart that blitz defence. Like Rod said, it ended in tears for Munster in the end, but he just manipulated that rush defence so brilliantly. And it's probably not something he's had to do so far in the Six Nations, but that gives me confidence and comfort in knowing that that's in his armoury. So I'd be shocked if we don't see a little bit more of that from Jack Crowley. It's amazing that we've come to a position where, however long we are into the podcast, and we haven't even mentioned Jack Crowley. That's the sense
of... His first test start at Twickenham, is it?
Joe McCarthy
as well.
We're not even really highlighting these guys anymore, because they feel like they've been part of the setup for so long. But I'm fascinated to see how Ireland go about picking that apart. I'd say, well, like, they're going to look to obviously to get the width as quickly as they can. You'll see, I think, plenty of bridge passes and things like that, but Crowley's kicking game could be really important.
I think McCarthy needs a big game. I think he's been a little bit quiet in the last two, you know.
Andy,
he was
Andy
so
Farrell
good
touched on that in the pressure,
and I thought that was interesting. And even against Wales, I think he was possibly under pressure from his pace a little bit, although they're trying to bed time into him and all that sort of stuff. And I'm not,
you can't just understand from
him.
The high though of Mark Saylor's performance that day. Yeah.
I think that he could get through Italy and Wales on moments, but I think this is where Ireland need him to be. Like, he is the game changer in my book as to how Ireland take the next step, and Leinster the same way. And this is where they need him to be physical. George Martin's a really good player. I really rate him highly. You know, I'm a huge fan of Itoje. I know he's been hit and miss the last couple of years, but I know what he can bring. And all you have to go back to is the first year and the two visits to Twickenham in 2020 and how much he lorded it over Ireland. I was actually looking back at the footage for a piece earlier this week and the time he ripped CJ Sanders.
I was writing about it, yeah.
Off.
Like, his battles with James Ryan have been so fascinating. And to be fair to Itoje, he's come out probably on top of more than Ryan has. But you said Itoje could be playing at six, but I still think Itoje is going to be in Joe McCarthy's face.
Yeah. Well, it's like, all George that, Martin. Like he was brilliant against South Africa.
Look, I feel like we kind of say this a lot, but like he needs to keep his cool, Joe McCarthy. Like I think England are really going to try and get in his head and target him. But
Plastic energy.
Yeah, like, but that's a compliment, you know, to Joe McCarthy and how well he's playing. But I'm fascinated to see how McCarthy handles himself in that sort of stage.
And I really do hope like Ireland are really challenged in this game and that England do. Like, I don't know if you've seen it, but Bongi Ambanambi described it as plastic energy, what England bring when they start chirping.
The Saracens.
And they start the Saracens over celebrating. And, you know, there's a great little clip going around of the Chasing the Sun documentary where England win a scrum penalty, or sorry, win a scrum in, or a kick is knocked on and they're all bringing it. And Bongi goes, they're just bringing the plastic energy, but they have to scrum against us, you know. And that's what England, Ireland need to undermine that energy. But if England get on top and Twickenham gets behind them, that's where it gets difficult. And like, I kind of want to see Ireland in that position. Yeah. It's been a very comfortable Six Nations so far. Crowley hasn't been, sorry, to say he hasn't been tested is unfair on him, but they haven't been, you know, he hasn't had to operate on slow ball. He hasn't had to think his way out of certain scenarios. I would like to see, for just even Ireland's development, them brought into a couple of dark places and see how they do. I think I'm fully confident they can get out of them. But, you know, if England get ahead early on, if they make Ireland chase the score, as we saw in the New Zealand game, that's a different challenge for these players. And there is a bit of inexperience there. If McCarthy's getting dominated and they're double teaming him, he has to figure his way out of that. Ireland need to figure a way out of that. So it's that's where you hope that there's going to be, and I feel a bit cheap saying like you want Ireland to be Twickenham should be the ultimate challenge,
of course,
and you know they'd only be the 15th team I think to win, an Irish team to win against England and Twickenham, so it would be a great achievement. But it just seems like they've coasted through and you hope that they're learning as they go, but they feel like they've a lot to go as well. They don't feel like they've played to 100% just yet.
Yeah. Before we go, just a quick one on the other games. Obviously this weekend, Italy against Scotland at 2:15 on Saturday and Wales against France at 3:00 on Sunday. Is this Wales team smelling blood here, or is France a bit too far for them?
Yeah, like we haven't seen the French team confirmed, but the French media are usually spot on in terms of predicting the team. And I think the changes that they're talking about making could actually play into France's hands in terms of freshening things up. So obviously Jonathan Dante is suspended. They're talking about... what's his name? Delporte, that's it, yeah, from Bordeaux, who is a sensation. I mean, he scored an unbelievable try last week for Bordeaux. He's been a standout for the French 20s over the last couple of years. Leo Barret coming in at fullback with Thomas Ramos going to 10. These changes could actually work in their favour. Emmanuel Miafu is finally going to get his debut by the sounds of it. So maybe this is what France need, just a little bit of freshening up. Their hand has been forced a little bit. Galtier is under huge pressure. Wales might be sensing blood, but Wales haven't really convinced, really, have they? I think Wales are in a funny situation because they've done the complete opposite to what Galtier has done post-World Cup. Gatland has just wiped the say clean, so they're getting plenty more leeway, which is probably fair enough because you've so many inexperienced guys in there. But, I mean, France surely have one performance in them. I mean,
surely.
Yeah, like I thought it would come in the previous round, and you were right. In fairness, Rod, we doubted you. We have to give you your due.
We laughed at you.
Yeah. Absolutely laughed in your face
did.
When you said,
and you were quick.
Oh, no, I was saying if it was on in Rome, I think they'd have more in a chance.
He was very quick to text us, though. I didn't need to tell us. Just as Garbisi was lining it up, so you jinxed him. But I'd be shocked if France don't have one big. Maybe it will come next week against the
Olympics or no Olympics either.
It's a strong
around.
Finish in France. I think, I completely agree with Keane. I think I just everyone's been so charitable to Wales, and like it's almost sad
it's kind of
to see a great team.
But
there's
a bit of leeway to be given.
Like,
I think there's
a team there, but we're at least a year away from them being able to beat France.
Generous,
I think, you know, like, and he's even, you know, I thought Tompkins and North were good against Ireland, and now they've both dropped, and he's brought in a new centre combination, and
Daffy Jenkins, you know, gone to the back row.
Which I think is possibly a good call. You know, that's an interesting one. Is Rowland's come into the second row?
Yeah.
So it's you need that against France. I just think France can get Wales into a corner, beat them up. If Miafu comes into the team,
they have the scrum.
Wales scrum was really bad against Ireland, and their props are not fit enough. And, you know, they're not at the level. I know France won't maybe aerobically challenge them in the same way, but they will. You know, they'll challenge their power and they'll take them into a corner, and they'll just, if they go, they can take them to some dark places. And Wales, I just don't see them having the tools to get out of there. I think in time, maybe, but a bit like this England team, I just don't see, you know, I don't see where they're going to get a win. And then I think France can get a good win in Cardiff and then finish strong when England come to France next week.
And what about over in Rome, Italy against Scotland?
Yeah, look, I'm fascinated to see how Italy build on, you know, the previous draw that they had, which probably felt like, even though the heartbreaking circumstance of Garbisi hitting the post, they probably felt like a victory in many ways for Italy. So, look, we've had plenty of false dawns when it's come to Italy. This is obviously a tough test because Scotland are going to be, you know, out to probably get a bonus point and keep in touch for coming to Dublin next weekend. It's just a pity, obviously, that it's not going to be potentially a Grand Slam. But look, I just hope Italy can actually back it up. I would imagine Scotland will have too much for him, even without Tui Pilato. It's probably going to be Cameron Redpath coming in. I think he's an excellent replacement and he'll slot in well with Hugh Jones. So look, Scotland seem to have a bit more about them. Whether it'll be enough to win in Dublin, obviously we can get on and talk about next week. But I just hope Italy can deliver a performance on the back of, they did so many things well against France, and to not have gotten it over the line in the end. It could work in one or two ways. It could galvanise them or else it could crush them. But they've got plenty of exciting talent in there, don't they? But it's just delivering on it. I'm reluctant to go too strong on Italy because they've disappointed me so many times in the past, but there is some bit of excitement there.
I think the fact that they've sold this game out, and from a long way out, this was obviously the one that Italian fans, whatever way they marketed it, I think the Netflix has given them a bit of a boost in terms of them being very likable in that documentary, and maybe that will show the other teams a way in terms of granting access and getting the reward. I think this has been the one they've targeted, and the fact that they got a draw in France, it's such a great result on paper. I know it could have been so much more. That alleviates the pressure somewhat as well. Now, that can go both ways. You could sail into the game thinking you're great and get undermined by what I think is a maturing Scotland team. I don't think they're going to win a Six Nations with this side, but they're the second best team in the tournament, and they have demonstrated a capacity to put Italy away in recent years, that they do have the tools to do it. You know, Finn Russell has been very good in this tournament. I think they're picking their moments. They're kicking more than any other team, and I think the only fear for them is that they're kicking to a very good back three. It's where Italy are at their strongest in some ways. So with can Capuzzo find holes in the chasing line? Probably, but is it enough to, you know, without the bodies that they're missing, like is it enough to kind of be able to beat them over 80 minutes? I think they'll make it difficult. Like, Rome's a hard place to go. England didn't have a comfortable afternoon there this year. Like, that Ireland game last year was one of the hardest games Ireland have had in the last couple of years.
So they won't be daunted by that Scottish pack either. I still think, like, and again, not to jump too far ahead, but that is, for me, the big difference between Ireland and Scotland is the packs. And when Italy are looking at them this week, I don't think they'll fear the Scottish back like they would have, you know, Ireland with the 6-2 like, bench and things like that. So they'll feel like they
mentally,
have a massive chance.
I just have so many doubts about Scotland, and winning the Calcutta Cup, like, it's great for them and they love doing it and it's their best performance every year, but they do tend to fall in love with themselves a little bit, and I just wonder if, you know, have the celebrations seeped into this, and have they already begun, because they obviously hate Ireland based on what we've seen and what we know, have they already begun plotting how they can ruin Ireland's party and knock Ireland off their stride, and do they take Italy on the run a little bit? Maybe they're good enough to do that, but
I'd be surprised if they have that attitude, to be honest. I'd be surprised. I don't think Scotland are the place where they can go to Rome and be complacent. I don't know. I think sometimes that Scottish thing is a little bit overplayed, I have to say. Like, they're not in a place where they can go to Rome and assume they're going to win and then just put all their eggs in the basket for Ireland. They should be good enough to win, no doubt, but I don't think they'll be complacent, to be honest, because they've slipped up too many times in the past.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the record against Italy, the fact that they won the Calcutta Cup, the fact that, you know, the highlights reels have been posted on social media over and over again, you know, the Van der Merwe hat trick, all that sort of stuff. I just wonder about the mentality. I think they do tend to fall in love with themselves, and, you know, come unstuck. You know, their track record in this tournament is of underachievement, and but they have been improving, and they are consistent in terms of getting 3 to 4 wins, you know, 3 wins every year, and they're trying to get a fourth, you know, and kind of challenge Ireland this year. But I just see them as being some way away from that, and I wonder whether they're mentally able to be consistent across week to week, and whether a big result like that can sometimes undermine them the following game.
Can we give a shout out to the other two Ireland games tomorrow, Sinead? We've obviously just seen the Ireland under-20s who are going for a Grand Slam. It's worth remembering as well. I mean, what the 20s have done over the last few years are going for 3 Grand Slams with different groups of players. And
this will be tough, though.
This will be very tough. This is going to be their toughest test. Yeah. But they're still trying to set up a Grand Slam showdown against Scotland in Cork next week. So massive game for them. And also the Ireland club team. Yeah. It's a brilliant thing. So the Ireland club team, for anyone who doesn't know, is made up of the AIL players. It's the first time since COVID that the game has happened. they're going to Lisbon to play Portugal A, which is great for Portuguese rugby, obviously, as well. We've seen what they did at the World Cup. And I spoke to Bobby Sheehan, who's Dan Sheehan's younger brother, for a piece that's going to be in tomorrow's paper and online. And what a great story this is. Not to ruin too much of it, but I'll give a little exclusive for the left wing listeners. But Dan Sheehan and Bobby Sheehan's dad, Barry, is going to Lisbon, and the two of them are flying out on a red eye on Saturday morning to make it to Twickenham for Dan's game. So what a story it is for two sons to be playing each other. And Bobby Sheehan was in the Ireland under 20 squad the COVID year, the Jack Crowley year, where they were on course for Grand Slam. Unfortunately, he didn't get to play in either of the three games that were played. So he's never had a chance to play for Ireland. So over the last few years, he's been watching his older brother, he's 2 years older than him, watching him become one of the world's leading hookers. Mm-hmm. They've never got to play together because they're both hookers.
Yeah.
He's playing six for UCD this season.
Is he? Right.
Yeah. Well, Gus McCarthy's come through and he's playing hooker.
He's captain UCD,
yeah.
So it's a great story.
I mean, it is a great story.
For the two Sheehans in playing for Ireland in the space of 24 hours. And I think it's worth, like, I was really keen to mention the club side because it was great to chat to a proper All-Ireland stalwart. He's only like 23, 24, but the passion that these guys have that's far away from the bright lights of Twickenham this weekend. And he was making the point that, you know, this is probably going to be my only chance to ever play for Ireland, and it means a hell of a lot having not got to play for the 20s. He was involved with the 19s. He never got to play either, so it's a huge deal for these club players who pour blood, sweat and tears every weekend for their clubs. And it's brilliant to have the club team back after it was shelved due to COVID.
Okay, before we go, let's go back to the bright lights of Twickenham. Predictions?
Ireland comfortably.
What over
50?
15 points.
15
points. Not 50.
Yeah.
No.
Just for the record.
50.
I'd say a bonus point win with a comfortable margin. I think it'll be tight for the first 40, 50 minutes and they'll just find a way. They'll bring on that bench and they'll find a way.
Yeah. Ugh. I think, what did the bookies last year, 10, 11, 11. Points. I think that sounds about right to me.
4 points of the difference. That sounds dismissed.
Yeah, but maybe not as comfortable though. Maybe not as comfortable in terms of...
Yeah, it won't feel comfortable, but by the end it'll be...
I for the reasons I touched on, I think the set piece, they could get after them, but I think like where Ireland are in terms of like their game plan, their personnel, I love the impact that the bench has made in Marseille in that Wales game as well. They've been rolling most of them off at the same time. I know Caelan Doris was speaking to you about it earlier this week in terms of the boost that those on the pitch who are going to be getting on. It's just such a departure from the World Cup in terms of Ireland not using it all. And like you said, Rod, it's become...
I wonder, do they have regrets over that?
Well, I think that's a podcast in itself. What regrets does Andy Farrell now have about the World Cup? Yeah. But, you know, I'm picking my moment to ask him, you know, should you have brought off Jack Crowley in the last 20 minutes?
They still beat South Africa with a 5-3. So so I think Ireland will win. I'm not sure if it'll be with a bonus point, but I think they'll win.
I think they will do it, but yeah, I don't know if it will be as comfortable as
bonus points.
I do think so. Yeah,
it'd be amazing if they like another bonus point win going into the final weekend.
I just think the calibre of this team is just incredible. So lads, you're off on tomorrow
morning,
London.
We'll be at the captain's run.
Right, good stuff. And we will have a podcast after the game on Saturday, so chat to you then.